When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a bonus Perpetual Chess covering the ongoing and riveting 2023 FIDE World Cup. I've got a two-part episode coming your way. I am joined by a co-host who I will introduce momentarily, and then we'll be followed up by an interview with international master Michael Rahal, who is at the playing hall. He's been doing a great job conducting the interviews. But before we introduce our co-host and before we get deeper into the match, I did just want to review what's happened for anyone who has not had a chance to follow. As we record this on the 17th of August, approaching the final rest day, obviously a lot has transpired. The final four has been determined in the open section. The final two has been determined in the women's section. So in the open, we've got Magnus Carlsen, Fabiano Caruana, Mija Abbasov, very surprising result, representing Azerbaijan as a 28-year-old, just putting on an incredible display, shocking result. And Pragananda, who won in dramatic fashion against his friend, Grandmaster Irigesi today. So Carlsen has already said that he's extremely unlikely to take a candidate spot. He said, I quote, "Under the current format, there's absolutely no chance I'll play in the candidates. I think everyone should operate under the assumption that I won't play and that everybody else who's in the semifinals is qualified for the candidates." So obviously that's massive news, career defining or altering potentially for Pragananda and Abbasov, less so for Caruana, who had many ways in, but nonetheless, he's played great chess, and I'm sure it is a relief. And of course, Carlsen probably will not play. So where that leaves us in terms of the rest of the candidate cycle is Giri is now probably the favorite for the Grand Prix spot. Gukesh is still in the running, and there's still others who could catch him. But Giri is the most likely. And then for the rating spot, of course, Caruana, who would be right there in the mix, now is no longer in the rating spot or the Grand Prix spot since he's already got the World Cup spot. So Nakamura and Faruja are potentially duking it out for a candidate's rating spot. But of course, there's still a lot to be determined in the calendar year. So again, in the women's section, we also now know several candidate qualifiers. Anna Muzichuk, who was defeated today by young upstart Nurgul Salamova, who is a Turkish-Bulgarian 20-year-old IM who's just been playing amazing chess, another Cinderella story. So she gets a candidate spot. Grandmaster Tan Zhongyi gets a candidate spot, along with Anna Muzichuk and Goryachkina, who is now in the final against Salamova. Already had a candidate spot. So that's the lay of the land in the women's section. But it's been a fascinating tournament. There have been surprises aplenty. Of course, one of the storylines being the continued rise of many top Indian players. They had four representatives in the final eight in the open section. So lots of fascinating storylines to discuss with our guest co-host before we get to the interview. And I did just want to give a quick shout out to our presenting chess education sponsors, chessable.com. Of course, they've got so many courses that whatever your opening is, whatever your interest of the game is, you can find something. Some of their new ones include a lifetime repertoire, Queen's Gambit Decline, from the always entertaining Pepe Cuenca, and of course, FM Nate Solon, who was recently on the pod, has a one night F3 course that you should get to support his excellent writing. And it's also a great course. I've already had a look at it. So joining me to discuss what has transpired is longtime friend of the pod. He helped me out recapping The World Champions I Knew by Jenna Sosanko some years ago, classic chess book. He's also a chess writer and a Chessable author and a candidate master. And I'm pleased to welcome back to the podcast, Vyacheslav Nemets. Welcome, Vyacho.
Hi, Ben, and thanks for inviting me again. Nice to be here and forcing my way through with my Twitter activity.
Yes, as you all know, I'm fairly active on chess Twitter, as is Vyacheslav, tweeting under Chess Centrals. And I know that he's been following very closely because he's been sharing some instructive positions and giving hot takes about the tournament format and discussing various games. So in looking for someone to do a quick recap of what's happened so far, Vyacheslav was top of mind. So Vyacho, you and I were discussing before we started recording, we both were traveling on vacation, in fact, for some of the match. Which for me, being on vacation actually means sometimes it means I can watch less chess than I would be able to if I were, air quotes, working at home. Because when I'm at home, I make my own hours and my kids are at school or at camp. Whereas when I'm on vacation, they need entertainment. So that's a long way of saying I've been very dialed in this week. But last week I was watching here and there and reading recaps. But before we got to what has been, as we said, should be a fascinating Final Four in the open section, what were your impressions of the rounds leading up to that?
Yeah, I found myself always almost interested in the first few rounds, of course, because the pool is much broader and there are always some potential storylines, upsets, interesting matchups, and also much more games to follow, and there is always some big drama involved. So I was actually, I don't know, there are quite a few interesting storylines and results that are maybe not so visible here. But one example that comes to mind is Turkish Grandmaster Sanal Vahap first struggling in the first match against my countryman Zdenko Kozhul, and then eliminating Abdul Satorov. So stuff like that I was closely following, and it's always fascinating to see those kinds of things happen on in the World Cup. So.
Yeah, the nature of the tournament is such that they're guaranteed to be surprises. You just don't know which ones they'll be. And then whichever ones they are, they still feel like a shock, even though you knew there would be a shock going in. And as you say, Abdusadov, who Mr. Dodgy and I both touted, as did many other pundits or whatever you want to call us who wish we were there playing, obviously young upstart, heart of a champion. But yeah, he was out early. Nakamura not out super early, but obviously the fact he's not in the Final Four, you could consider a minor surprise. But it's been very entertaining along the way. And of course, the incredible performance by so many Indian players, bit of bad luck that Gukesh had to play Carlsen in the final eight, because who knows how many candidate spots they could have gotten if the pairings had been a little bit different.
Yeah, I don't know if you are baiting me into expressing some of my hot takes there, but that sentence kind of reveals one of the things that I'm not even complaining, but more like, wondering about, because basically the lack of the draw basically kind of messed up with Gukesh's chances, because arguably it's much harder to go through Magnus than anybody else in the tournament. So yeah, it was a little bit of a pity, although given his recent rise, I have a feeling he might still get it in the FIDE Grand Swiss and such. But I joked on Twitter that this should have been renamed to All Indian Open Championship, and it seems to that the boom is continuing, and who knows how much of them will be in the next candidates.
Yeah, no, and you do raise a valid point. And in addition to the dialogue on Twitter, I'm in the World Championship Chess Facebook group, and not necessarily engaging in the dialogue myself, but I certainly do see a decent number of complaints that they say, wait a minute, so the World someone who's not going to play in the candidates determines who gets to get in. It just doesn't seem right. And, you know, Dodgy and I did talk about this. And as I mentioned, I actually have extremely mixed feelings about it just because I do feel like the candidate slots make it extremely compelling, much more so than just like a $60,000 prize. But on the other hand, I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to have a rule where if you qualify, you have to play. And if you already have a spot, you can't play or something like that. If they're going to have three spots, or someone I think it was in a Facebook group suggested, and Dodgy also had suggested, they could reward fewer spots based on the World Cup. Like if you only do it for the winner, then at least there's fewer conflicts along the way. Although, of course, if Magnus plays and wins, as seems entirely possible, then it could still create an issue. So, yeah, there's always going to be hot takes. But the bottom line is the stakes are high. And if you just sit and watch, you're likely to enjoy the chess. I know that. Is it fair to say that you've enjoyed the chess, Vecco?
Yeah, for sure. And actually, you raise a good point about making high stakes, because, you know, for a long, long time, we have been listening to this whole Czech classical chess is boring death narrative. And okay, this is not only a classical tournament, but we see that the games become very interesting, and there are many decisive results, and there are many mistakes that happen almost purely because of the nerves. Like, we can see how the stakes and how the awareness that a single mistake can mean elimination makes people falter. But yeah, the chess has been fantastic. There have been so many great games, both in the open and the women's section, and it is a pure holiday for any chess fan, even if they're not on holiday. So
yeah, and for those of you listening who saw the playoff today between Iga Świątek and Pragananda, obviously these are phenomenal young players, you know, with huge futures ahead of them. But yeah, as they got to the faster time controls, of course, Iga Świątek ended up losing to Prague in a 3-minute. After, so as we discussed, laying out the format before the tournament, it goes two classical games, then two game 30 games, then two game 10 games, then two game 5 games, then 3-minute, where it's no longer a two game match. It's if someone wins. But anyway, in the 10 game match in particular, the first game of that two game set, Iga Świątek just had Prague basically dead to rights. I mean, he was up a clear pawn and putting pressure on top of that. And Prague, found a way to threaten some checks. And under the pressure, Iga Świątek went to a traded queens and went to an endgame that should have been equal. But suddenly Prague was the one who was able to create chances. And Vecco, as a non-professional, seeing the sort of eval graph, as it would be, change in real time from like winning to suddenly you lose the thread, but you should be drawing, to suddenly you're losing, and then you sit back and you're like, how did that happen? I found it so relatable, and you don't see it from super GMs when extreme nerves or faster time controls are not involved.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I won, especially like in those end games. Like, I think that many miraculous things and mistakes have happened in endgames in particular. So somebody said, I think on Twitter, that if anything World Cup taught him, that endgames are super difficult in chess. So
yeah,
so yeah, it's kind of curious to see some of their games reminiscing of my own games or our own games. And when you mentioned this, like, it was also interesting to me because that whole Iga Świątek Prague match was fantastic from all sorts. But I think the second game, or the second classical game of the match, was also pretty noteworthy from the psychology viewpoint, because okay, Arjun wins a fantastic game one with black pieces with this knight g3 sacrifice. Well worth checking out. It wasn't supposed to be enough for a win, but it's like pure practical pressure. It turned out to be Prague couldn't navigate himself out of it, especially in time trouble. And then in the second game, Arjun only needs a draw, and then he plays the Avapin, which, and clearly tries to kind of almost force a draw, and then he ends up in some slightly worse position, and then somehow in the end game, which is still kind of holdable, just Prague outplays him with an amazing style, like almost playing like a king end game, going with his king to the kingside, collecting all the pawns while both the rooks and the bishop are on the board. It was an amazing position, and I think that game demonstrates the most how nerves and how, like, you know, willingness to force a draw affects them. Because if they play in some round robin, 9 out of 10 times it will be like a draw if white needs a draw. But this was a particular case, and this makes the format very entertaining.
Yeah, I do love the format. And of course, you have so many near misses as well. Like Magnus just barely survived against Vincent Keimer. And obviously, if Keimer is able to finish off that match, then we're talking about like entirely different things right now. And obviously, Keimer, another player with an immensely bright future in front of him, but ran into Magnus early, didn't quite convert his chance. And now he goes to the back of the line like everyone else.
Yeah. That was very close. Like knight x4 in that game, and it's almost like no way he doesn't even win. So let alone gets eliminated. So yeah, man, but there are many situations, both in rapid and also in classical, where you know people say, oh, there's no way bouncing back with black in the second game is so difficult, or bouncing back in the second game, and yet people do it over and over. And I think that this. Awareness that you only need a draw, you know, messes up with people's psychology. I mean, I'm not an expert, but it feels like that these second games are always super interesting and entertaining. Yeah.
Yeah, and like today in Prague Iragacy, like Black won six games in a row, literally like six games. You know, so yeah, there's so many interesting psychological dynamics at work. And Michael Rahal, who you guys will be hearing on this podcast shortly, did ask Prague about like whether he had any theories about that. And he just said it's tough to get anything with white these days, but maybe there's still some sort of psychological desire to press when you're white. It's fascinating. And again, like black has done well even in classical in this tournament, but especially when the clock speeds up, that seems to be the case. And one other interesting storyline from the people who've emerged is, of course, Abasov. I mean, what a story, you know, number 97 coming into this match in the world. And he's up, obviously, heaps of Elo points. But, you know, he's not like some young phenom, you know. I mean, obviously, 28 is pretty young in the grand scheme of things. But in chess, it basically means you're geriatric these days. And nonetheless, he's just put on an incredible display. And like, what a gauntlet of players he's run through to get there. And funny enough, did you hear of Yeko that he's working with Salamov? Like it's like teacher and student, and both of them have had career-altering performances in the World Cup.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Yeah, I was just about to say that that's probably one of the best runs in the World Cup ever since those early FIDE World Championship tournaments, I would say. Or maybe even more surprising, I think. I was also about to say almost as good as the run of Salimova in the women's section, yeah. But yes, I didn't know that they were working together. I just wanted to say one thing, because I read some people on Twitter heard saying that, oh, this is great because because this disrupts the old generation of players who usually play only round robins. But from what I've seen in the previous World Cups is that in the final stages, despite almost all the upsets along the way, usually it's established 27 plus players who survive, usually, or at least in, as far as I recall, in the last 10 years. I may be wrong, but that's the impression I have. And I think Abasov is like the lowest rated player to reach the final four, which is just amazing. And yeah, we'll see whether he will be up to task in the candidates, because I was listening to Chicken Chess podcast actually today, and they did say that in the classical portion he did, I think, 1-1 against everybody except for Vidit. But definitely, I mean, it's super compelling, and it will be super interesting to follow the candidates as well with somebody like that in the field.
Yeah, and I know that I've seen some people online saying like he doesn't belong in the candidates. I saw this on Reddit somewhere, and like he's going to get trounced. But I'm more optimistic than that. I mean, I don't think he's going to win. You know, he's not likely to win. But this, as I've said before, this alters the trajectory of his career. It possibly gives him the opportunity to build a team, to devote more time. Maybe he'd even get some government support from his native Azerbaijan. So to me, it's fun. And, you know, even though I say going in, like, you know, anything can happen, as you allude to, anything can happen, but anything usually doesn't happen. So it is fun to see a true upset. You know, someone like Salamov, even though she in particular, I can't say she was on my radar going into this, but a 20-year-old, fast rising. Like, it's not as shocking to me. But there was another sort of funny storyline that 2 years ago during COVID, she was like a student in Anna Muzychuk's workshop. You know, she was doing like some workshops for, you know, rising young players. And because she was 18 and Anna's a, you know, world-class player, she gives a workshop and now she's beating the person who taught her 2 years later. It's amazing how quickly things can change. So as we look ahead to the finals, Vieco, any hot takes? Michael and I did, we batted it around and eventually made some tepid predictions, but what do you think we'll see in both the open and the women's section of the final four and the final two?
Yeah, well, considering that I had Vesvesov winning the tournament in Mr. Doge's prediction and that I had Abdusatorov beating Magnus somewhere along the way, I'm not sure how seriously my prediction should have been taken. It's good that I didn't go to official bookie. But okay, I mean, in the open section, I mean, betting on anybody against, except for Magnus would be a little bit, you know, crazy. And also, I think in the other matchup, the Prague Caruana. I mean, obviously, anything can happen. And I think it's actually not a coincidence that Prague is doing well here, especially since, okay, he's obviously a strong player, but since this format does involve Rapid, and from what I've gathered, he has been very well regarded for his Rapid results, like we have seen in the Champions Chess Tour, how he already beat Magnus and got some news in the India. So it's not surprising that he also beat Nakamura in Rapid, right? So if it gets to Rapid, then I think it's almost 50-50, with all due respect to Fabi's Rapid skills, which I'm not underestimating like many others. But I think anything then Magnus Fabiano final would be a bit of a surprise. But we'll see.
Yeah, that's the same thing I said. So I won't repeat myself too much. But yeah, I mean, and it does just feel like there's got to be a huge weight lifted off of Prague's shoulders after that epic match. And for him to earn a spot in the candidates when he didn't necessarily have another surefire way in by any means, as opposed to Fabiano, who he's happy to get the candidate spot, but here to win it. And of course, as you say, has an edge in classical and can bring his legendary opening prep to bear. Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, he has been playing amazingly, like, well in this entire tournament. Like, and also, I just remembered people should definitely check his game against Dominguez, the first one where he escaped. That was sensational. Like,
yeah,
and that position.
Yeah, and that also underscores how, like, you know, again, as they say in sports, like, anyone who's here has caught a break along the way, and certainly that's the case with Fabiano. It did not look good in that game against Dominguez, just as with Carlsen, it did not look good against Keimer. But Vieco, you know,
sorry,
people...
we didn't women's section. Let's not
go ahead.
Forget the prediction. I mean, it's not, yeah, just wanted to mention that we don't only focus on the open section.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
there obviously Goryachkina is the big favorite.
She's so strong, yeah,
it's so good, cool. And she's been playing super well. I think the game against Tan Zhongyi, I think, with black pieces. I urge people to study that one. Like, it was super amazing how she outplayed her in technical style. So yeah, but you never know. Like, Salimova played very well, and you know, she will probably play freely and optimistically. So anything can happen. But
yeah, tough to bet against Goryachkina, but yeah, I mean, amazing performance by Salimova, and I'm excited to see her in the candidates, even if she is unable to knock off one of the greats. But Vieco, this has been a lot of fun. Anything to say before we say our goodbyes and get back to looking forward to Saturday as the classical section of the final four in the open and the final two in the women's resumes?
No, nothing in particular. Like, yeah, make sure to check the games and not just the results. And yeah, show respect to all the players. So, yeah.
Excellent.
Too bad that we didn't get Giri Fresinet. That's the only downside of this World Cup.
Shout out to the chicken.
The damn new Abbasov, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been fun. Okay, well, listeners, stay tuned for a fun interview with I Am Michael Rahal about what it's like to be in Baku and interview all these legends, as well as a little more big picture talk as well. And Vieco, thanks as always for popping on.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me, Ben. It's an honor.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are here, fresh from an epic tiebreak match. We are joined by a return guest who is an international master. He is in Baku working as the press officer for FIDE. When he's not in Baku, he is a Barcelona-based chess trainer, commentator, author, journalist, translator. He wears many hats, but we are pleased to welcome. I'm sure he's had a long day, so we appreciate international master Michael Rahal joining us. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for the return visit. A pleasure from my side.
Yes, yes. It's been too long. And wow, what a match. I mean, we have to start with this unbelievable Pragananda-Irigesi match, which just concluded. We're recording about 15 minutes after Pragananda finally won in the three-minute tiebreak. So it's not even two-game matches anymore. They go to a three-minute game, and Pragananda finally won. What was it like? Obviously, you're a journalist there, but what's it like sitting there just watching the match in person, Michael?
Very, very exciting. So I have to say that when there's 25-minute games, I'm normally in the press center following the games with the other colleagues. But when it gets down to 10-10, I'm just sitting down there and enjoying as any fan would be. Now there's less spectators, most of the team around the game. And when it got down to 3-2, I mean, the last game was unbelievable. It was so exciting. But of course, we have to be professional and, you know, keep the silence, make sure we don't get too excited. We can't check the game with any computer or anything, because I mean, we're in the playing hall. So we're just, you know, trying to see what's happening, keeping silence. And it's very exciting, very exciting. I can assure you these playouts, when it goes down to 3 minutes, it used to be Armageddon, but now they changed the rules. And when they get down to after six games of tiebreaks, when they get down to 3 minutes, it's a 3-2 game, 3 minutes with 2 seconds increment. And basically they just play until someone wins, but always with three minutes, 2 seconds. So no more Armageddons.
Yeah, just incredibly entertaining. Obviously, huge stakes with candidate spots on the line. So when you're watching the game, Michael, is there a demonstration board, or are you just kind of trying to see the chess set without leaning on?
No. There's
a digital display.
There's a stage. I try not to go onto the stage because, I mean, there's... The cameras, the arbiters are doing their job as well, obviously recording the moves. But on the two sides of the stage, there are two huge displays, and we could just follow the games from a distance. So yeah, the spectators are also watching the games from a distance. But of course, there's no evaluation bar on the games. It's just, you know, pure chessboard with the pieces moving.
Okay. Yeah, and obviously, I feel like you just interviewed Pragananda, as you alluded to 10 minutes ago. It's not even up on YouTube yet, but will be shortly. So what was his reaction to what had to be the biggest win of his career so far?
So normally, it's funny because normally when the process is as follows. When they finish their games, there is a fair play check. So the winners of the game, or the winners of the match in this case, when it's a tiebreak, have to join the fair play officer and go to a special room where they're checked. I mean, it's just a formal procedure, but it has to be done. And then they allow me to interview the player in our special interview area where all the interviews have been done up to now. But today, And the reason why we do that is that I can't interview someone on the stage when there are other games going on in the hall. I mean, just wouldn't, it's not on. You can't do that, no? But today, as it's the last game, I asked special permission to the arbiter and the fair play officer to interview Prag before they took him to fair play. And of course, as long as I don't touch him, there's no human contact, well, it's okay. I mean,
right.
It's just a formal procedure. So actually, I went onto the stage as soon as he finished, and Rigaisi graciously left. And I was with Pragnananda. His mother was very nearby as well, waiting. So yeah, he was super excited. He actually said, I need to take a bit of a breath.
Yeah.
Because it's huge stakes. I mean, it's a huge pay jump. That's number one. Now he plays Caruana for a spot in the final against Magnus Carlsen. That's number two. And also, I mean, he's just won a spot in the 2024 candidates in Toronto. So, I mean, it's huge. It's for a player such as him, it's huge. And also, one of the Indian colleagues here, he told me that he thought that if it went down to blitz, Rigaisi had an edge.
Huh.
And actually, if you followed the match, you'll notice that Prag went ahead two times and Rigaisi came back. So it seemed that Rigaisi was getting the momentum towards the end. And so that last game was unbelievable, really amazing. He was very happy, very, very happy.
Yeah, for sure. And I get what you're saying about the blitz. I was David Howell and Grandmaster Peter Lecoe did an amazing job on the chess.com broadcast. And David said that he'd played Rigaisi in a blitz match in a tournament. And it was one of the only times in his career that he felt completely outclassed. And obviously with Grandmaster Howell, we're talking about someone who's done training matches with Kasparov. So that is a high praise indeed. And yeah, they both just showed, I mean, obviously nerves came into play, but they both just showed tremendous resilience. But
I mean, the final game, Prag played brilliantly. The game just before that one, I actually thought Prag was going to win and he ended up losing. I mean, both of them played really well. Rigaisi showcased his resilience as a defensive player. Both of them are very, very good. And actually, they're very good friends as well.
Right, yeah.
You know, they train together. They go for walks together. They go for jobs together. I mean, they're friends. I talked to both of them and asked them, I mean, how are they able to be such good friends and do everything together here in Baku? And then they have to face each other on the board. They can't talk about theory. I mean, it's a very special situation.
Yeah. It's amazing. International Master Irene Sukander has been sharing on social media. She keeps running into them walking together, which is just crazy to see. And what's for both of them was the highest stakes match of their career. But Michael, we've only got you for a limited amount of time. And despite the sort of, we're both trying to process this amazing match that just concluded, I'd also like to zoom out and talk about the experience you've had overall, because I've been watching, of course, everyone should be subscribed to FIDE's YouTube channel where they're posting your interviews shortly after they occur. And obviously you've gotten, you know, when we spoke in our first interview in 2017, you were talking about how when you covered the Olympiad in 2004, you got a chance to interview Kramnik, and that was quite an honor. But this is just like one legend after another in like these intense moments. So what has the experience been like for you overall, Michael?
Very nervous. I'm generally nervous, but you get used to it. I just have to try and remember to be professional, to be clear, to try and speak well, to ask interesting questions. Sometimes it's better, sometimes it's not so good. And just try and avoid being starstruck when I talk to the top players. But I've got used to talking to them over the years as well. So I wouldn't say I'm a friend of any of them, but as a colleague, a professional colleague, I think they also respect me, which is good, and it makes my life easier. By the way, I said before that he qualified for the candidates. He actually, I mean, he theoretically has won a spot, but only if Magnus declines. Of course, Magnus yesterday said that everyone had to operate under the assumption that he will be declining. But of course, and until it's 100% official, Prag, we can't really say that he already has won the spot for the candidates. He could still end up fourth. And as there are three places, theoretically, if Magnus accepts, Prag will be out, or the fourth player would be out. But Magnus did say yesterday that everyone should operate under the assumption that he won't be playing the candidates tournament.
Yeah. Like you say, you can't know for sure, but he was pretty clear in that statement.
He was pretty clear in the chess.com interview. Yeah.
Yeah. So like we were saying, I mean, you've interviewed Magnus himself at this tournament, Ivanchuk, Fiddler. I mean, basically everyone, because anyone who went far in the tournament, it seems that you're primarily interviewing people who won their matches or won their games. Is that correct?
From third round onwards, basically, I'm interviewing the players who won their games or their matches. Whereas in the first and the second round, I was focusing more on getting more a flavor of the international element of the tournament. So I was interviewing players from different continents, different countries that didn't necessarily have won their match, but they would like to talk about their experience coming from far away to play in the World Cup. I always leave the good players for the later stages when there's less players and they'll still be there. Of course, that does mean that sometimes you don't get a chance to interview one of the better players who was eliminated in the second round. For example, I would have liked to talk to Grischuk, but he was eliminated in the second round by a young Iran player. But yeah, most of the good players have at some point or other come to the interview area.
Yeah, that makes sense. And of course, as a chess podcaster who's interested in sort of the behind the scenes flavor of the tournament, I'm glad that you do try to catch the people for whom it's a once in a lifetime experience.
Exactly.
To even be there. Now, out of all these interviews, I mean, you're catching people at such a sort of intense moment, especially as the tournament goes on. Are there any of the interviews stand out to you in particular?
Okay, so of course, when you talk to Magnus, if he says something interesting, that always blows up. I think it was the second interview with Magnus. He just started talking about chess being stressful, boring. And I was just listening to him. I didn't expect this. And he just carried on. So I decided not to interrupt, just let him keep talking. And I think that he really wanted to talk. It was the sensation I had was that he just really wanted to get everything off his chest. Now he's talking about how stressful it was to play, how even boring it could be to play classical chess, whereas he prefers blitz and rapid. So for sure, that day, the interview was very interesting. And another special moment for me was interviewing Alexandra Garyachkina, the top Russian player who plays under the FIDE flag, as you know. So Garyachkina is a player who doesn't normally show her emotions. She's normally very stoic. She doesn't smile. She's well known for giving very few interviews and also very short interviews. So I had to think up of a way to get her to smile, to get her to be comfortable in the interview. So I decided to open the interview in Russian. I learned some Russian words and started talking to her in Russian, which obviously surprised her and eventually got her to smile and even to laugh. So I think one of the nicest things I've been able to get here is for Garyachkina to smile and show her nice side. I mean, because she is a very nice person, but during interviews she's always like, you can just see her face. I mean, she no nonsense, don't want to show her emotions. No, so you get to learn small special ways to try and get the other person to open up. No, which is what I try to do.
That's interesting. And have you been studying Russian like for years, or did you just try to pick it up on the fly? Or
two years ago, I did the World Cup. I was the press officer in Sochi in Russia. And so there I got to meet a lot of Russian people, obviously. And I started to pick up some words, not many. And I was writing them down. And I'm lucky that my cameraman, Sergei, he's Russian. So when I need to learn some special word, if I don't understand something they're saying, I just ask him. And so it goes through him first. Just a few words. I think for Alexandra, I said "Privet," which means sort of hello, as you know, because I think you speak
Russian.
Yeah, I
did study Russian, so I know some.
And I said "Как дела," which means how are you? And, you know, two or three things. And it just caught her by surprise. And when the translator translated already, she started smiling. So that was sort of like to break the ice, it went well.
That's good. Yeah. And in a sense, it's like the worse your Russian is, the more charming it's going to be, you know, because this is going to be like, look at the cute foreigner trying to speak, trying to speak my language. And obviously, as when you visit a country, it's appreciated. Well, Michael, you mentioned having been in Sochi in addition to this World Cup. How do you compare the two in terms of, I mean, players talk about conditions, but just like the venues and the town / cities, et cetera?
Well, here we're in Baku, which is the main city of Azerbaijan. Whereas in Sochi, we were actually in a mountain resort where the Olympiads were held, the 2014 Olympiads. So it is slightly different. But both of the venues are spectacular. I mean, Azerbaijan, more specifically, has a huge history of important chess events. They did the Olympiad in 2015, and the World Cup in 16, or the other way around, I can't remember, but one after the other. This was actually where we're lodged in the Marriott Hotel, was one of the hotels they used for the Olympiad and the World Cup. So they're very experienced at organizing very good tournaments. And this hotel is very good, very good. The food is good. The hotel is excellent. The playing hall is very big. Of course, now there's only, I think, there's eight players left, which is four boards. So it's very small, the actual playing area. But the room where it's been held from the beginning hosted nearly 250 players the first days. So what we've done is gradually close the room using flags, using sponsor banners to make it sort of a more closed area. And now spectators can come in, sit down. So they organize these things very, very well. And Baku is wonderful. I mean, I've never been to this area of the world. And the people are really nice. The city is wonderful. It's amazing. I mean, I come from Barcelona, which is an amazing city. But when you get here and you see how clean it is, how people enjoy their time, it's very hot. It's one of the problems. It's very hot in August. But apart from that, it's amazing. So I'm enjoying it a lot.
Okay. And you mentioned the hotel food, and I know we're going to say goodbye for you to go eat in a minute with some of your colleagues. What's the food been like generally, both at the hotel and to the extent you've been able to sort of explore the town?
Okay. So the food here is very good in the hotel. Of course, it depends a bit on the day. It's sort of a buffet where you can choose whatever you want to eat. The thing with buffets is at the end, it becomes a bit boring because you're always, the food is different. But of course, it's still the same buffet. So every 3 or 4 days, my colleagues, the main arbiter, Laurent Freud, and some of the other arbiters, some of the organizing team, we just go for dinner and we choose one of the restaurants in Baku. And tonight we were between a Georgian and an Indian restaurant. We were trying to decide which one to go to. And I think in honor of Pragnananda, we'll be going to the Indian restaurant.
Okay,
And that's good because you get a chance to go out. And also in Baku, as it's so hot during the day, the evening is very pleasant. The temperature cools down. You can go for a dinner, maybe some drinks, or just go for a walk on the boulevard, which is about 5 kilometers long. Here, there's the famous flame towers. There are three huge towers that flame up, and they have different colors. It's very nice. It's actually very nice, Baku. I'm enjoying it a lot.
Wow. Yeah, sounds very pleasant. And obviously, for the players, the few players remaining in the tournament, tomorrow, the last rest day, today or so, by the time people hear this, will be stressful. Do you actually get the day off, or do you still have some stuff to do? Like, I know there were some interviews on rest, or I guess it's been... Anyway, I'll let you answer.
No, the free day, there's two free days during the tournament. And most of the people who are working here, the organizers, arbiters, myself, other colleagues, we actually do have a free day. Okay, occasionally you might have to do some specific task, but it's always minor tasks. It's a free day for the players, but we also need a free day. We've been here for the last month, and we've been working every day. So you really need at least one day every now and then to sort of disconnect and go to the beach or just go for a walk. Some of the team get on a car and go 1 hour to these volcanoes, to the mud volcanoes, or that's not for everyone. So you just decide what to do with your free day. And at least we don't work. And players can get more than one free day, depending if they play the tiebreaks or they don't play the tiebreaks. For example, today, Abasov, Carlsen, in Caruana, they didn't tie break today. So they have actually had two free days. But I can tell you, they're not moving away from the hotel. They're in the hotel. They're here. They're preparing. You can see them at breakfast. You can see them at dinner. You might see them go for a walk, of course. They need to disconnect. But there's a lot of it in stake. For Caruana, it's a chance to get to the candidates. Abasov, the same thing. Prague, obviously, the same thing. Carlsen, probably he's not thinking of that when he's playing, but he's never won the World Cup. And 2 years ago, he lost against Duda in semifinals. So this is one of the things he really wants to do for his career. So they're taking it very seriously. And the same in the Women's Cup, which now has a finalist. It's Gariachina will play against Salimova, who defeated Muzichuk today. Also quite a surprise, actually.
Yeah, she's been incredible. What a performance.
One of the games today was unbelievable. I mean, she sacrificed with d5 and then sacrificed the rook and ended up with one of these opera morphe mates.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Very, very nice. Very well
played. Just incredible performance. And speaking of Caruana, I know you interviewed him, and as you alluded to, they do get tired. Fabiano said, "I guess I'm playing well, but I do feel quite tired. It's a pretty energy draining tournament. Between the final four tournaments, it will probably come down, or final four players, it will probably come down to nerves and tiredness."
Yeah,
pretty much says it all, and that certainly came through in the Prague and Irigesi match.
Prague is actually very lucky to have a free day tomorrow, because if there wasn't a free day, he'd have to face Caruana, who today has been resting. And these tie breaks, I actually think that they are... So, for example, let me give you an example. You notice that Vidit eliminated Nipomnichi in one of the tie breaks. It was a grueling tie break, super long, super tough, many games. The next day, he had to face Abasov in two games. And the first one was a draw, a very long game. And the second game, Abasov just crushed him.
Yeah.
I have to think that the tough tiebreak for Vidit and no free days, that had to pay a toll, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because he looked drained. He looked really without any energy.
Yeah.
So it is long and they have to recover. Yep.
Yeah, and Abasov played a nice attacking game, but it also seemed like Vidit wasn't at his best.
He wasn't at his best. He was taking time to think. He was...
Yeah.
Even his face was like, of course, he's a elite, world-class player, but he's been playing for 7 or 8 days in a row, and he just defeated Nipomnichi with all the extra excitement that brings the player. Everyone's telling you, I mean, yeah, great, you know, you're on the track. I mean, and then you have to play another player. You haven't rested, and this affects you. I'm sure it affects you.
Yeah, and obviously it's tough. A career-defining moment. He and Abasov are both 28. You know, for either one of them to presumably have a chance to punch their ticket to the candidates is potentially a once in a lifetime opportunity, which I get no joy in saying because I'm a big Vidit fan. I would love to see him make it at some point. So
all the Indian players are super nice.
Yeah,
all the players are nice in general, but the Indian players have something extra special going for them. They're humble. They're communicative. They talk to you. They're very nice. They have their feet on the ground. Vidit is especially nice.
Yeah,
and Prague as well, of course. All of them. Maybe Kukesh is just a bit more calm, a bit more, you know, stands back a bit. Not, but he's younger as well. So
right,
so Vidit is very, very nice. They're role models for me.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Michael, I know you've got to get to dinner. I really appreciate you making time to do this. Any closing thoughts before you finally go get some food after this very long day?
Yeah. Well, as I said, tomorrow's a rest day. And I would really encourage everyone to follow the official broadcast here with Edin Krush and Edin Tsukander. Also, the chess.com broadcast is fantastic with Howell and Peter Lecco. It's very good as well. For those who speak Latin languages, we have also chess.com is doing Spanish with Ernesto Fernandez and another grandmaster, Miguel Santos. So it's really easy to follow the coverage. And we're getting some really interesting matchups. Carlsen against Abasov will be really good, a two-game match. And Caruana against Prajarna. What do you think, Ben? Who do you think will go to the final? I can't really say. I have my favorites. I mean, you can say. What's your bet there?
I'm not gonna win any points for originality here, but I think we're on track for a Carlson Caruana showdown, which would be absolutely amazing. Especially again, Pragananda is obviously very dangerous, but what you alluded to with the fatigue, for him, you know, he's got less time to bounce back, and you know, hasn't been on this stage as much, and also like. Caruana had many roads into the candidates. So obviously it's a relief for him to presumably have that ticket punched. But, you know, he had the rating spot potentially. He had the circuit spot potentially. Mm-hmm. Whereas Prague, like, it's like he's already won the tournament in a sense. You know, at least that's how I might feel if I were him. So I just feel like psychologically Caruana might have an edge as well. And then Caruana Carlson, all bets are off. I mean, you know, those guys have played each other so many times that, I mean, I do feel like, of course you have to make Magnus a small favorite, but only a small favorite. I mean,
And that one could easily go to tiebreak.
Yeah, very exactly. Easily
that could go to tiebreak. Something, I have a sort of sensation that Magnus wants to win the tournament.
Yeah. Well, I think sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, 2 years ago, he lost it in semifinals. I actually asked him the question in the interview, and he reminded me that, because I was there, I interviewed him when he lost the game with Duda. He overpressed in one of the games. And in a two-game match, you can't do that. You can't overpress. You have to know when to stop and let it go, and we'll do a draw, and then tomorrow we have a second game. If you overpress with white and you lose, it's super difficult to come back in a classical game and to win. Sometimes it happens, but it's very difficult. And I think that he's really focused. His play was a bit dodgy at the beginning of the tournament. He was even virtually eliminated by Kamen in one of the games. But then 2-0 against Ivanchuk, a relatively easy win against Gukesh, relatively easy. It seems to me that he's going in crescendo.
Yeah.
And now Abasov, although Abasov is playing fantastically, I really think that he's a huge underdog against Carlsen at this stage. And then it's just one game left. It's the final. Yeah. So I think Carlsen will take it down this year. That's my feeling, but we'll see.
It'll be fun. All right. Well, Michael, enjoy your meal. And thank you so much for taking the time to do this. It's been a lot of fun.
Pleasure. And as I said the last time, you're doing a great job. And I enjoy listening to your interviews every week. So keep it up.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.